Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. According to Gallup, 58% of Americans now favor legalizing marijuana, and few doubt that recreational marijuana will be legal in just a few years. Dr. Wes Crenshaw says that years of educational propaganda in schools that equate marijuana with heroin and cocaine have yielded a generation of cynical teens and young adults who now scoff at any establishment message about pot. He's back with a panel of young adults from the University of Colorado to talk about legalization, use, and addiction, and why marijuana is now so revered that it often defies healthy debate. We'll try to have one here anyhow on Up to Date. Dr. Wes Crenshaw is a board-certified family psychologist. He's author of I Always Want to Be Where I'm Not, Successful Living with ADD and ADHD, which he talked about last month on the show. He writes the weekly Double Take column in the Lawrence Journal World. He's just opened a new office at 83rd and Mission Road in Prairie Village. And welcome to Kansas City, Wes. So good to have you.
Hey, I feel like I belong here already.
We'll find out after today's show whether or not.
May get ridden out on a rail.
He's joined by a panel of young adults today. Brooke is a sophomore at the University of Colorado at Boulder. In addition to her life as a student and sorority member, she's directly involved in research in the School of Business on the economic impact of legalized marijuana. She joins us from KGNU out in Boulder. And Brooke, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Penny's also with us. She's a student at a major university in the Kansas City metro, and she's on the phone this morning with us from Lawrence. And Penny, nice to have you too. Welcome.
Good morning.
Well, Wes, this is not your favorite topic. Why not?
Oh, my
Here
goodness.
We go.
I was raised as a temperate Methodist. And it's more than that, though. I think that the entire discussion and debate about marijuana and all substance abuse has gotten lost, as you said in the opening.
Yeah.
And so when you try to have a conversation with young people about it, it's just more than any other issue, more than sex, more than religion, more than parents, more than anything, they just put their fingers in their ears.
You're even more skeptical of drug education than you are of marijuana itself. Why and where have we gone wrong with that?
Yeah, I've hinted about this in some other shows because I think it applies across the board to how we teach kids about controversial issues. And I don't mean to step on anyone's toes. Well, probably I do actually. But things like the DARE program, and I'm going to call it the DARE program kind of generically, all drug education programs, all the way dating back to the 80s, you'll remember that Nancy Reagan started the Just Say No campaign.
That's right.
And to illustrate quite simply why that does not work, there is a delightful musical called The Fantastics that was on Broadway or was off Broadway in New York for 50, 60 years. And the key song in it is called Never Say No. And the point is that if you tell teenagers no, they're going to probably do exactly the opposite. So no has to be armed with a lot of intelligent explanations.
Mm-hmm.
And the DARE program instead tended to set up this all or nothing idea that marijuana was legally and from a drug use standpoint, really the substantial equivalent of heroin and crack and cocaine. Well, the minute kids figured out that that was propaganda, they just discounted the entire bulk of information that they were being given, not to mention the fact that every kid who uses drugs knows that DARE was the great place to learn how to use drugs. And you can ask any of them, and it's just kind of an inside joke.
Brooke, is it an inside joke? Does that all make sense to you?
Absolutely. If you've seen recently on SNL, Seth Rogen did a skit exactly what Dr. Wes is talking about, where he pretends to be educating these kids about drugs and ends up convincing them that it's a great thing, and they all leave like ready to go try crack and all this. And it's a widely accepted notion, I think, what Dr. Wes is saying.
You know, Penny, even this notion that, you know, so many drug educators sort of link marijuana with, you know, eventual use of heroin and cocaine. Did you experience that message too? And how did you react to it?
You know, honestly, when I was at the age where there was a program that we were learning about in elementary school, I didn't even really know what drugs were at the time. They're not they weren't anything that ever crossed my mind as a that young. And I think that's another issue, is that we're starting kids off way too young, even talking about drugs. The DARE program, like I said, was something I learned about in elementary school, and I wouldn't have known about drugs otherwise.
Well, given that, Penny, what's your sense of how we should be teaching kids about using, you know, drugs? What would be your message?
Well, you know, it's kind of like drinking ages in Europe. Introduce it in moderation. And I think, like, the way people's right to choose what they want to do is what makes people want to rebel. If you just, like, teach kids that this is out there and this is, they're okay, like, you, marijuana in particular and, like, alcohol be used in moderation and responsibly, and it doesn't always have to be an addictive drug or alcohol, you know, but we don't really, we just tell kids not to do it at all and avoid it and make it a big thing, and
yeah,
it makes people lose respect.
Brooke, weigh in here. How would you teach it?
Well, I think that's a hard thing because kids grow up watching their parents drink alcohol, and it's hard to tell a kid that you can't do drugs or marijuana, but they're watching you, you know, drink, even though it's legal. And so that's kind of the interesting facet about this legalization of marijuana now. It's hard to tell kids you shouldn't be, you know, smoking marijuana when it's legal. So I think it's hard. I don't know how you would do it. That's a great question, though.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Brooke brings up a fascinating point here. There is a general concept in America that the correct way is what's called the European model. There is no European model, but this is how people refer to it. And it's the wine at dinner model, that if families will have some wine at dinner, this will teach their kids to use drugs and alcohol respectfully. The literature on this, and I wish I could go back and dig up the exact study, that absolutely does not support this. What the literature says is that families that do not use any drugs or alcohol in the home during the period of time they have children will have much lower rates of substance abuse and dependency in their children later in life.
Well, say that again. So if families that don't use anything, no drugs, no alcohol in the house, they're more successful in the long run.
To be specific, their kids will have a lower likelihood of alcohol dependency and abuse, as well as drug dependency and abuse in later life. That doesn't mean kids won't use some drugs and alcohol in high school and college, but they will return to the, just like with everything else, kids return to the core values in the home. And this is not a surprise when you are thinking about something terrible like suicide. The kids of people who commit suicide have a much higher rate of attempts of suicide because a door is opened to them, like both of the young women we're talking about, that wasn't perhaps opened before. Mm-hmm. And once that door is open, what kids do with it is sometimes go much further than was intended.
Because my tendency would be to think that in households where there's no alcohol use, no drug use of any kind, that the kids might be more curious and might be the more likely to go off the deep end once they have the freedom to try that stuff.
Yeah, the larger studies of that, and of course you don't do controlled studies. So much of what we talk about in research is correlational, and I always like to mention that because you don't usually set up control groups where you have one family where you tell them be alcoholics, and one family you say be moderate drinkers, and one family you say don't drink at all, and then monitor their kids. Nobody can do that research.
Yeah.
But correlationally, the other thing that I think clinically goes along with this is the European wine at dinner model. It is pretty rare in our culture. It's more common to have a parent occasionally be drunk in front of their kids. And sure, people will call and say, we don't do that. We just have wine at dinner. Great. Have at it. I'm not telling you not to. I'm telling you that usually in our country, substance abuse for adults is associated with overuse. Mm-hmm. And kids see that, and that opens up another door.
Well, Brooke, so you're saying to us here that, you know, parents, you know, they have alcohol in the house. In the state of Colorado, marijuana is legal. And so you're sort of suggesting that any notion of parents telling kids to stay away, that is just an absolutely ludicrous concept in your mind.
I don't know what I would say to that. I would say that it is widely accepted here, that people probably wouldn't disassociate with people who tell their kids it's okay to smoke marijuana here. But at the same time, I would say that I think that it is less widely used. So I would say widely accepted as a cultural norm, yes. But
you're talking about marijuana now, Brooke?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. Yeah.
But I would say I was telling Wes the other day, it's not like you see like suburban moms walking down the street with a stroller smoking a joint. It's not at that level by any means.
Yeah. Well, Wes, in your column last week, you noted that while recent studies suggest that alcohol and cigarette usage has dropped among high school students the last 20 years, the rate of 30-day marijuana use among high school students is up almost 25%. And when you say that the rate of 30-day marijuana use is up, what does that mean exactly?
It means that in the past 30 days, whether a person has smoked marijuana or not, and it went from 17%, I think 5 years ago, to 23% now. And the problem is that's not even that almost doesn't say anything, because the reality is that the better research that nobody does would be what I call peer nomination research, where you would ask young people, and we can ask the young people we have here, how many of their peers do they know have used marijuana in the last 30 days?
Mm-hmm.
And would either of you care to take a guess at that in your peer
Penny,
group?
Penny, take a crack at that.
No, I live in Lawrence, Kansas, so I could honestly tell you, and I know a lot of different people, that I can't really think of anybody who hasn't used marijuana within the past 30 days.
Brooke, how about you?
Yeah, I would put it pretty high. I would probably put it around 75%. Mm-hmm. Within my own peer group, I would say, like Penny, I would say probably all of them, but you know, trying to take in consideration that I don't contact every group of peers. I would put it at 75.
And I would say that's pretty accurate from my clinical caseload. And I think, though we have college students here today, it is very much the same in the high schools.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me get our listeners involved here. If you're a parent out there listening to this, what concerns do you have about your teenage kids using pot? Or do you think the concerns we hear are way, way overblown? And by all means, if you're a teen listening to this, give us a call. What don't parents get about you using marijuana? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Again, 816-235-2888. Let's go to Russ from Bonner Springs. Russ, good morning.
Good morning. Well, a couple of things. First of all, my parents excessively use and abuse one substance or another, and that includes tobacco, which they both smoke like chimneys, and the daily ashtray fires, and dad staggering around and mother forgetting how to open a door so she'd kick it open and that sort of thing, were really good object lessons into why to not do that. I'll occasionally socially have a beer, have never had a desire to smoke, and have never really had any desire to do anything else. Took a puff of pot once back in college because somebody suggested I should at least know what I'm talking about. Now I do, and it disinterests me. As far as my daughter went, I suggested that if she were going to do something like that, she should do it at home with me there so that if anything went wrong, she would be in a familiar and protective environment. That's exactly what went down, and now she's pretty straight-headed. It's, just being honest and open about not so much the dangers but the ickiness tends to help, and I think probably parents who are excessive should, at least for a rational child, provide an object lesson in, well, that's not what I want to do. I'll take my answer via FM, and thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Russ.
Boy, he raised a lot of good points. First of all, I know kids who went through substance abusing parents and are just teetotalers at this point, and I know kids, and they are statistically the majority, who really follow that path. We always tell people to do as I say, not as I do, as a joke.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unfortunately what happens. Kids will tend to follow the behavioral patterns of the parents, and many times those are very subtle patterns, or as he mentioned, sometimes they're not very subtle. But he was able to convert that, as I would suggest to a lot of people, into sort of a reaction formation. It's what we call that against the substance abuse behavior. He also talks about that, you know, this is something that's sort of the European model, this idea that if you're going to use substances, use them in the home. And again, I'm not going to tell people not to do that, but usually that's not the recommendation we make, because then a lot of kids don't simply limit it to that. They don't associate proper alcohol or drug use is done in the home. They see that as the platform off which they jump into a broader use pattern.
Let me get Penny to weigh in on that. What do you make of Russ's idea, Penny, our last caller, who says that, hey, he urged his daughter to, you know, use in the home and he could be there in case anything went wrong. What, is that a good idea or not, or impractical or practical? What do you think?
You know, as I was saying before, the way that Europeans, kind of like Wes said, introduce alcohol use in the home, you know, like casually at, I think that's like a really good approach personally. If it were done to me, I think that he had his daughter try marijuana in the house for the first time, kind of made it more safe. And I think it of like doing it amongst peers and like, you know, using out of control, I think just like the use of moderation in a safe environment would be the best way to introduce it.
Yeah. Brooke, what do you think?
Well, so it's, I guess, the difference between using it with peers and using it with parents. Either way, you're still using it. And I guess I'm curious as to if using it with your parent means it's less cool and therefore less attractive to young people, or if using it with friends. Like, I'm curious as to what is that fundamental difference between using it for the first time with your peers and using it for the first time with your parents.
Yeah. I think you're right on it, Brooke, because the point of substance use is to be deviant, is to deviate from the culture. And what's interesting and concerning to me is that if we decide, and I'm throwing this question open to listeners and to the two young women, if we decide that marijuana is now mainstream, that it's really not, you know, naughty anymore, we're all in an agreement on this now, then what's going to be the next naughty thing to do? Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling the young women have some thoughts about that.
Brooke, that makes sense?
Yeah. I definitely see that happening, at least out here. And I don't think it's there yet. I think marijuana is still very cool right now, even though because it is still illegal in so much the majority of the country. But I do see, you know, the general thoughts on it are that it is not as deviant or not as cool as some of these other drugs that are out there. And I actually see, you know, when people go to parties and they are looking to do something far more deviant, which is sometimes the point, they will go for the other drugs such as cocaine or, you know, maybe it's hallucinogens or ketamine, but that's what I see out here.
So they have to go another step beyond marijuana to get sort of this, be as deviant, to use that word we're using here, to be as deviant as they feel they need to be.
Yeah, I think so, especially those people who do it for the purpose of being deviant.
Yeah.
And by the way, I don't know that they consider – they don't sit down and think, how can I be deviant today?
Yeah.
There is no consciousness of that. But I was surprised in doing show prep and interviewing both of these young people that I know. They both indicated that cocaine was much more heavily used than I was aware of. And it takes a lot to shock me. It really does with what I do for a living, but their estimates of cocaine use were way above what I was aware of.
Penny, weigh in on what Brooke just said. Are you seeing sort of the same pattern here that kids, you know, marijuana is going to become a little bit passe and kids are going to want to try some other stuff?
Well, you know, to be honest, I don't know if I necessarily agree with the fact that people smoke marijuana to be deviant. I think that it's kind of just become alcohol in a that it's a nice present to use at the end of the day. And it's even, you know, I think it's, I'm totally saying, like, at the end of the night, you and your friends go out and you come home. Sometimes you sit around and it's kind of just natural. You smoke a bowl. Like, marijuana has become just a really social drug, whereas, like, if you were wanting to go out and do drugs and, like, be crazy and have a good time, I would say people would turn to, like, Molly or ecstasy or cocaine more so nowadays to experience that level, you know.
Because what you two are saying is going to scare the you-know-what out of parents who are listening to this show today. I mean, that's you're really freaking a lot of people out here, including me a little bit. That's really concerning.
I mean, it's scary. It is scary, but these are the facts, you know. Like, it's just, these are my options just as a young person in college. It is scary, and I don't really know what we can do to start reversing it. This is just how it's become.
Yeah, I completely agree with Penny. I have friends that will just smoke before they go to bed, just as a nighttime sleep aid. It's very, I would say, even beyond just social. It's just something that people our age do, I think.
It's like a sleeping pill almost.
That sense, yeah.
Well, and I want to speak to that. I totally agree with the young women. And I agree with Penny that it isn't seen as deviant anymore. That's the point, is when people want to be deviant, they're going to these other drugs. But one of the things that's interesting is that the zeitgeist amongst young people today is that marijuana fixes everything. If you're anxious, smoking will help that. If you have ADD, smoking will help that. If you have bipolar disorder, smoking will help that. If you're depressed, smoking will help that. If you want to look more attractive, I don't know, I made that one up. But whatever it is, it will fix it. And I was having an argument with somebody the other day that smokes pretty heavily. Some days therapy is an argument. And I said to this person, you know, I'm getting kind of worn out with this. If you go into your doctor and you say, hi, I'm here, and they hand you a prescription, you're probably going to question their reality, because not one medicine doesn't fix everything. And she argued with me a little bit. And finally she says, you know, Wes, to be honest with you, it isn't that weed fixes all my problems. It just makes me not care about them anymore. And I've run that past a lot of young people, and all have agreed that's fairly true. And that is, in my version of reality, not that helpful. I admit I'm a problem-solving guy. I think if one has a problem, that they should figure out how to solve it, and that sometimes marijuana is fixing a problem by not fixing it.
So I guess the question on the table here, Wes, there's a whole bunch of them, but one of them is, what's a parent to do here who is now facing this new reality of, well, okay, marijuana might scare them enough as it is, but hearing, you know, Penny and Brooke talk about the fact that, you know, once kids are trying marijuana, they might want to advance onto other drugs at some point down the road. I mean, again, this is going to scare a lot of parents.
Yeah. Well, I'm increasingly seeing this from the same perspective I see sexuality. Katie Gio, my former
who's been here before.
Yeah,
yeah,
she's been on the show. She and I are going to be developing a book next year called Consent-Based Sex Education. And I think consent-based is a good starting title for anything, including drug use. I think that people are, in the current culture, it's actually not accepted to not be using marijuana or alcohol or other drugs.
I would agree with that.
It is not okay. And this is different. So many young people today want to identify themselves with the hippie culture. This has become very trendy. And I was there. I was little, but I was there. And that was about live and let live, and, you know, let everybody be who they are and let it all hang out and so on. That's not at all how this is now. It is expected. People are angry at their peers if they're not going to use. And part of a consent-based model is to learn how you say yes to things, because people are going to say yes a whole lot more than no. No has not worked. And anyone who wants to, anybody from the DEA or anywhere that wants to call up and say no has worked, is going to get buried in this discussion, because no has failed miserably.
So consent-based is the idea. Just walk a step further with that. It means what exactly?
You cannot learn to say no to harmful things unless you've learned how to say yes to them. And that may seem paradoxical, but if you understand what it means to give informed consent to do drugs or have sex or anything else, if you really understand the ramifications of that from a standpoint of, when you choose to do this, here's what you're getting yourself into. Mm-hmm. That's heard differently than these kind of propaganda runs where you are, you know, I just got into 2 days of sex education over the weekend from the University of Michigan. And one of the questions on the test was, true or false, it is very helpful in teaching kids about STIs to show them lots of pictures of disease. That would be a no. That would be a false. Mm-hmm. And yet that is the way we approach this. We show them heroin addicts in the street, and we give them all these statistics, and their ears close. And rather than talk about the day-to-day, moment-to-moment issues they are encountering realistically with drugs themselves, we get off in this kind of tortured propaganda.
Well, let's do this. Let's take a break. And this is a very interesting conversation, very provocative conversation. Again, our number here, if you're a parent, you have questions about what on earth to do with your teens, give us a shout, 816-235-2888. And if you're a teen listening here, what don't parents get, what doesn't society get about how you're approaching this issue? We want to hear from you, too. 816-235-2888. We'll continue this good conversation in our second half. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. This hour, we're talking about marijuana use, drug use among kids, how parents can deal with this, what they need to know to begin to approach it, and what a difficult, even intractable issue this can be. We're visiting with Dr. Wes Crenshaw once again, and also a couple of students, Brooke and Penny, both college students out in Colorado, talking to us about what they're seeing going on out there. Our phone board is full. Surprise, surprise, 816-235-2888. 2888 is a number here. Let's go to some calls and go to Mike from Kansas City, Missouri. Mike, nice to have you. Good morning.
Good morning. I might throw one observation in the mix that I think could be brought up for the younger ones. There's a lot of scientific study, I believe, now Dr. Crenshaw could address that shows that the human brain is still in an active state of development.
That's right.
During teenage and young adolescent years. And so the use of drugs, marijuana, any of them, or alcohol, is probably more deleterious to the human brain at that age than it is to their parents or us older folks who our brains maybe are more set in our ways. And I'll just take the comments from your panelists off the air.
Yeah, Mike, thank you.
The literature supports that. And the problem is when you get into any conversation with a young person about this, the internet is a powerful tool, and they have 1,957 links that say marijuana is helpful, it makes your life better, everyone should smoke more of it, and if you have problems with the smoking part, just get a vaporizer.
Mm-hmm.
So it is difficult because we have propagandized them. And what the caller just said, I would not count as propaganda. That is particularly true with alcohol. But what we know from the research, we've not been able to impart because we folded into this scary dare message and kids just push the ejection button.
Brooke, does that make sense to you, this notion that, hey, you smoke dope, you might be messing with your brain cell count up there? Does that do anything to you or not?
Yeah, you know, I've heard that from quite a few people who are anti-pot, but it sends a mixed message to kids here because it's legal. They just legalized it recreationally, and so they're sending the message that it's okay. It doesn't if it was harmful, it wouldn't be legal supposedly. But to be fair, they did put the legal age same as drinking at 21. So the theory is that hopefully, you know, same with alcohol, that your brain is developed by that time, and that would be the time that you would supposedly start using it. That it wouldn't be affecting your brain at that point. But at the same time, they are sending a mixed message. They did legalize it recreationally.
Well, and my position is that I'm all for legalization. I'm just not for using it. That's the
is that
difference.
Your message? Just don't use it.
My view is that if you can use it recreationally, and I do know a tiny number of people who do, great. That's the same way with alcohol. If people used it recreationally, we wouldn't have near the problems we do. But college students drink. If you define alcohol abuse the way it's defined professionally, most college students that drink at an alcoholic's level. The question is, will they change that behavior after they finish college? And some will and some won't, and you cannot predict which is which. And so the same is true with marijuana or anything else. Moderate use of anything. Honestly, believe me, I'm about a zero fan of cocaine. But if a person were to use cocaine moderately in controlled situations, recreationally once in a while, there are tons of people who do that and don't run into problems. That's just not how people do it. Mm-hmm. And so the behavioral aspects of drug and alcohol abuse are what guide it towards problems, not mm-hmm. just their inherent chemical properties. I hope I'm being clear about that. Don't people run a story in the Star tomorrow that says Crenshaw recommends using cocaine. Crenshaw did not do that.
Okay. Paul from Lansing. Paul, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi, Paul.
I think we should just legalize all of the stuff. Have it sold through stores, tax it just like we do everything else. And those people who use, let them use as much as they possibly can, because the job market out there is pretty tight. And if these people self-select to not participate, more power to them.
Social Darwinism.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's interesting, and really one of the very finest television series ever made. I learned that it was good by listening to Terry Gross. It's The Wire on HBO. Mm-hmm. In the fourth season, I think, the police officer decides to secretly decriminalize drug use, and he confines it to a specific portion of Baltimore. And everything gets better. They are able to regulate it. They are able to clear out the neighborhoods, make them more safe. And, of course, then the higher-ups get a hold of this, and that's politically unwise.
Yeah.
And down it all goes. I am not saying that's a good idea. I'm saying watch that show and think about it, because the show is about a social experiment. And it just asks you to think about what we're doing, whether it works, and what alternatives there might be.
Yeah. Paul, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. You know, one thing I'm thinking here is the legalization of marijuana in Colorado and other states is at least going to have us begin the conversation on a topic that we have struggled yes. to talk about as a society forever.
Absolutely true. And parents have struggled with this for as long as I've been around. You have the parents. I know parents who buy not just alcohol for their kids, but for everybody in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And that's now illegal to do that. If you can get into big trouble doing that. But it has been a common practice for years, the theory being they should be wildly drunk in my home instead of out on the street. I understand that theory. But talk about, as Brooke said, mixed messages that we give kids. Alcohol isn't a safe thing to use.
Yeah.
Cigarettes
we're
certainly
just used to
are
it.
Not.
Yeah.
We've
yeah.
just decided we're going to accept the risk that is inherent to those as a society.
Marijuana and how kids and adults should handle it is our topic today. Dr. Wes Crenshaw is our guest. Brooke and Penny are also with us. Ryan from Plattsburgh, Missouri. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
I was just calling because I'm a college student, and I have never smoked pot and probably never will. But I am saying that if I were to go to a party with my friends, and they were going to do drugs regardless of what anyone says, I would much rather them do pot than alcohol or tobacco, because it's obviously safer than alcohol, because, you know, when you're at a party and you smoke pot, you're not going to do stupid stuff like you would with alcohol. You know, I've seen some parties where people will be jumping off the roof because they're drunk, but, you know, if they're high on pot, they're not going to do that. They're not going to do anything stupid like that. They might, you know, run around and be, you know,
yeah.
just run around and do stuff, but they're not going to do anything that could be a major harm to them.
I'll just wait,
Penny, does that make sense to you, Penny, what he just said, what Ryan just said?
I get what you're saying. No, you know, there's a huge difference between going into a house full of drunk people and going into a house full
yes.
of people who are high. Obviously,
yeah,
one is going to be crazy and out of control, and the other is going to be sitting around a bag of Cheetos.
That's like interesting.
yeah, the worst they'll do is raid your fridge.
Yeah.
yeah.
And to yeah. In a much less humorous version of that, and the young women can tell me if they disagree. I have it is the rare young college student I see who has not had a low consent sexual encounter under the influence of alcohol, some all the way up to date rape. And I've never had a college student who was date raped under the influence of marijuana. Could it happen? I don't know. I'm not a marijuana user, but it is common with alcohol. So the harm, the risk factors for alcohol are extraordinary. Now, that said, I want to be clear, this is the standard marijuana, pro-marijuana argument. Well, it's not as bad as alcohol.
Yeah.
That is irrelevant. That's a true statement.
Because
that doesn't make it good. The problem with marijuana, and the smoking folks will disagree, is that it is essentially the drug of sitting around not getting anything done. And college students are already having a hard enough time. We've talked on this show before about the 46% rate of discontinuation in college students. That marijuana plays a factor in that. Now, can I prove that scientifically? Not really, because, again, you can't do controlled studies and say you're the weed group and you're the control group. Let's see who wins.
Mm-hmm.
It's all correlational. But anecdotally, and I have many anecdotes, college students who are heavily smoking are just simply not using their time and energy on what it takes to get through college, which is a pretty desperate struggle.
You know, Brooke, I want to go back to this notion of us poor parents out there who are listening to all this and wondering what on earth we are to do when it comes to the messages we give our kids. I'm wondering, in your situation, how did your parents deal with this? And now that you're in college and away a little bit, how would you recommend that parents deal with all this?
Well,
in 20 words or less.
Yeah. Sure.
Good luck, right?
Yeah, sure. You know, honestly, it was my peer group that had more of an influence on me than my parents growing up, because I was lucky enough to have friends that were pretty much against a lot of drug use, and that was cool within our group. You know, maybe not universally, but I would say to parents, get your kids the right friends, because my parents could have gone either way. And at the end of the day, I think my friends made more of an influence than they did, unfortunately. Sorry, Dad.
yeah.
But, and then I would also say to parents, just understand that it is very accepted, amongst my generation. And, you know, if you want your kids to be independent thinkers and making healthy decisions for themselves of their own thinking, then that's a quality you have to instill in them from the get-go. And that's going to concern anything. That's going to concern, you know, eating poorly, not exercising, drugs, alcohol, tobacco. Teach them, you know, smoking is cool. You know, I'm talking about tobacco smoking is cool. Drinking is cool. And I know drinking was cool when my parents were in college, and yet they – you know, either did or didn't do it. I would say, parents, put yourself in the mindset that you were in when you were in college. Figure out how to teach your kids how to be independent thinkers.
So you would say the baseline of understanding here is that for parents need to understand this behavior is going to happen, and the conversation begins from there, if I hear you right.
Yeah.
I agree completely. I will tell you one of the most profound conversations my dad and I ever had, and it will take exactly 10 seconds. We were sitting around doing something, and he was Korea War era. He didn't get deployed, but he was mighty close. And he said, "You know, Wes, I smoked in the Army." And I said, "You did?" I couldn't believe it. I couldn't imagine it. He said, "Yes,
smoked
tobacco or
marijuana." Okay,
I don't. I think only jazz musicians smoked weed back in the 50s. But anyway, I'm just kidding. He says, "Yeah, I smoked in the Army." I said, "Really?" He said, "Yeah. I hope you never have to decide to smoke."
Mm-hmm.
And that was the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And you understand, he is acknowledging in this the existence of smoking, the possibility that I may choose to, and his hope that I will choose not to. That's all it comes down to. You can take that message and build on it, maybe not always as subtly, but that's a consent-based message, is to say, I know there is drinking going on. I know there's cocaine use. I know there's marijuana use. I'm hoping you don't have to choose to let yourself become impaired by those things.
And that's all good. But if I'm hearing Penny right, if I'm hearing Brooke correctly, Wes, the answer is the decision's already been made. It's being used. So the question for parents then becomes, what do you do at that point? Oftentimes dealing in a realm, i.e. drug use, that many parents aren't familiar with.
Yeah. Go
Penny,
ahead, Penny.
Yeah, please. I was going to come to you anyway here.
I have one suggestion personally, I think that parents should have their kids leading more active lives. I think if your kid is not eating well and is kind of lazy, spending a lot of time in front of the TV, a lot of time in front of the computer, their brains are going to be dulled out, and they're probably going to be more likely to be the kids who turn to do drugs and abuse them because, you know, these are the kids who are depressed. Whereas, like, when you see kids who play a lot of sports growing up, they travel a lot, they're, you know, part of activities, extracurricular activities, these people will probably in college use drugs at some point, but these kids are going to be a lot less likely to become addicted to drugs and to abuse them.
I think that's actually very wise. I know that the kids around the metro are like, oh, the soccer team smokes all the time. There are kids who are very active that also are using drugs. But it is a fine point for the reason you just stated. I would also like to point out and follow up what you said, that there is a thing called behavioral addiction, and really marijuana is more of a behavioral addiction, whereas cocaine has a potential for physical addiction. Mm-hmm. Alcohol does too. Behavioral addiction can include things like video games, and it does. To be honest, this is new thinking for me, and so I may change my mind. I'm beginning to believe that when you compare marijuana use amongst young men and video game use as to which is the most damaging right now, video game use wins. Because the amount of time put into it and the way that young people interact with video games is not headed in a good direction, and it's becoming very behaviorally addictive, primarily for boys. We're going to talk about that in another show some other time, but I'm just saying addiction isn't limited to a bowl of pot. It can be anything that's pleasurable that you do to the exclusion of things you ought to be doing.
You know, I just think it is hard work being a mom or dad these days. And let me tell you, I speak from personal experience.
I always say my goal on these shows is to scare you, Steve.
Well, you always manage to, Dr. West. Liz from Mission. Liz, you're on Up to Date. We're talking about marijuana use, drug use, and kids and how to deal with it all. Good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes. You're coming through loud and clear.
All right. Aside from being illegal or legal or cool or uncool, I think I've read an article about a research study that showed that long-term marijuana use is associated with depression. And I think that's something that needs to be in the conversation.
Yeah, and I think Penny kind of alluded to that in reverse, that people who are kind of depressive-ish may be more prone to use marijuana, but there, you know, it kind of depends on how you define depression. If it means you are low energy, and then smoking marijuana's goal is to sort of make you sit around and be mellow and hit the Cheetos, then that may look pretty depressed. I don't know whether the heavy pot user is going to say I feel depressed or not, but the research also says that over the long haul, if you look at people's brains who use heavy amounts or heavily use marijuana, their brains look more like people with schizophrenia. No, I'm not saying they get schizophrenia, but the brains are affected, and there's continuing to be that kind of research coming out.
Okay. Terry from Roland Park. Terry, you're on Up to Date with Dr. Wes Crenshaw. Good morning.
Hi there. Yes, I'm 56, and I've done smoked pot, done cocaine, but alcohol, to me, is the biggest problem. And that's all I have to say.
I think there is a reasonable argument to be made for that.
Okay.
And
yeah.
The problem is prohibition didn't work very well.
Yeah. And Penny, just to come back to you just for a moment, what else would you, if you can see yourself being a mom someday, what else would you begin to think about telling your kids about all this and how you might handle this issue one day when you're a mom?
You know, I kind of would want to go by my parents' standards. Like, my parents, I can be open with them about things I see and do in college, and my parents don't judge me, but I've known since day one that they don't approve of my, like, any kind of drug use, alcohol abuse. I know their point of view on it, and at the end of the day, they leave me to make my own decisions, and it's kind of like, you know, subconsciously, I don't want to disappoint them. Like, I would never want to go to prison for drug use. I would never want to have any kind of dependence on drug or alcohol because that's just not how I was brought up.
Yeah. Okay. Back to some calls. Tyler from Kansas City, Missouri. Our number here, 816-235-2888. Tyler, good morning to you.
Good morning. I guess I just kind of wanted to do the defending point and make the statement that there's a exception to every rule. And I guess what I'm trying to say is that I think there's a lot of people that are productive that use marijuana. I know a couple people who do use it on a regular basis, and they're actually very successful. I know, you know, one works in a bank. I know a couple other people too. So I guess I just kind of wanted to make that point.
This is what I call the Nobel Prize argument. That I know so and so, and he won the Nobel Prize, and he smokes every day. This is kind of a standard argument, and the problem is I know I don't know. Penny and I were talking about it the other day. I don't think Penny, would you mind me saying, I think you would have not graduated college if you'd have kept smoking at the rate you were smoking. Do you mind me saying that, or should I take it back?
I mean, no, absolutely. There's a huge difference, because I can say from someone who used to smoke pot every day that you cannot be productive when you're high all the time. But as somebody who smokes recreationally now, like, I appreciate marijuana, and I'm also able to function in society and be productive, you know.
Right.
Yeah, and I
agree.
What's that?
Tyler, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I would say I definitely agree that you're making a huge, valid point. I didn't want marijuana use in a recreational way be demonized at all, because I think there are a lot of people who do enjoy it and enjoy it in a very good way and don't abuse it.
And there are people who enjoy video games and don't get impaired by that. And there are people who play golf
exactly.
and don't get impaired by that. And there are people who are addicted to all of those things. And so part of the message parents have to talk to kids about is sort of the one I said earlier. I hope you never have to become impaired by these things. I think parents really need to get a grip on the video game use. And I am not a very hysterical person. I hope I have sounded calm today on a topic I am not that thrilled about. But video games are scaring the bejabbers out of me at this point, and the amount of time and energy and focus. I have young people sit on my couch and say, I don't know what I'm going to do. I can't stop doing this. And they're talking about Call of Duty. So anything has the power that's pleasing to be addictive, and marijuana is very pleasing.
Let's go to another call here. Kent from Eudora on the Kansas side. Kent, good morning.
Good morning. Let me get prepared here. My question is, what pushes kids more, alcohol to use harder drugs or marijuana? Because I have a long history of starting with alcohol and gravitating to other drugs because alcohol is kind of pleasurable. I don't drink anymore, but I'm curious about that.
I don't know that there's any real way to support the gateway drug hypothesis. But if a person – I think it's more plausible that if a person tends to become overly focused or obsessed with a certain thing – they're going to be more likely to do it again and again. This is what's been called at times the addictive personality, and I would lean away from that. That's kind of deterministic. But some people, they get started at something they like, and they just keep on doing it. And so whether it's alcohol or something else, if you started with alcohol, that just happens to be what you started with. So I don't know that anything – you know, and there are things that are just instantly addictive. Heroin is just plain physically addictive. Cocaine's more addictive than a lot of people want to admit, but it's less so than I think some people think.
You know, Wes, in your column you wrote the other day about all this in the journal World over in Lawrence, you were talking about this notion that with all projections indicate that marijuana use is going to skyrocket as big corporations begin to move into that game. You know, a question there, what are you thinking there? What's going to happen once corporations get involved in terms of selling marijuana?
That report comes from an NPR program, and the fellow that was being interviewed was a very pro-legalization person, and he was doing the journalism on that. And the estimate is that there will be a tripling of use once big tobacco gets involved in this. I think Brooks State ran out of marijuana, didn't they, when they legalized it? I think there was like a shortage.
Actually, legally you can grow it at home. So I
fixed
if
that
you
problem.
Smoked all your own. If you smoked all your own, I guess I didn't notice a shortage. To be honest, maybe after 420, the big weed holiday. I will say, though, to the legalization, and you know, I work with a lot of the numbers that go through the Colorado state. I would say that, you know, it's a good experiment to look at, you know, what are the tax revenues look like? What is the crime rate look like after the legalization? And mm-hmm. there's a lot of, you know, you're talking about big corporations. You know, is it an economy stimulator? And that's generally considered a good thing. So I would say those are numbers worth looking into.
We're going to leave our conversation there. I want to thank Dr. Wes Crenshaw for coming in, and Brooke and Penny also for your time today. Guys, thanks so much for such candid insights. We sure appreciate it.